I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
School of Humans. In 1629, in a Virginia settlement called James City, not Jamestown, James City, a landowner, 29-year-old John Atkins, was stressed out. There are a lot of reasons to be stressed out in colonial Virginia. Of course, yeah, it's hard to be sympathetic to colonizers, but with the weather, the environment, the contentious relationship with the Native Americans, the lack of resources, disease, starvation, there were a lot of issues facing the early colonists of Virginia. Like take Jamestown, which was established in 1607. Originally, 104 people went over to establish the colony, but in 9 months, only 38 survived. Archaeologists think that most of them died from disease and starvation, but some of them might have died from arsenic that was in the water, and also them drinking water that had their own feces in it. You know, classic death by shit. We see that all the time on this podcast. Just be aware where you put your dung. Yeah, like in early Jamestown, there was even evidence that the colonists had to go to even greater lengths to get nourishment and survive. Early in the colony's history, there was a great starvation called the Starving Time. And at this point, they had resorted to eating cats and dogs and horses. And then there's also evidence of a dismembered 14-year-old girl who they cannibalized. A couple decades after this happened in 1625, the former president of Jamestown, he said, "Nothing was spared to maintain life and to do those things which seem incredible, as to dig up dead corpses out of graves and eat them, and some have licked up the blood which hath fallen from their weak fellows." I have always said that the blood of weak fellows is some of the best blood, so I totally get it, Jamestown settlers. But anyway, that's all to say that living in the New Virginia colony was hard. It was slightly better in 1629. That's when John Atkins was having his little meltdown. But his complaint, it wasn't about disease or food or starvation or the conditions he was living in. John Atkins was having a headache because he was thinking about purchasing an indentured servant named Thomas Hall. Thomas had been working for another landowner named John Tyros. And the problem is that Atkins thought Hall was a man. But Tyros swore that Hall was actually a woman. Not Thomas, but Thomasine. That's right. Sometimes Hall dressed in men's clothing and sometimes in women's. This was causing a big kerfuffle amongst the colonists. See, in 1620s Virginia, there weren't that many drag shows. There also weren't that many people practicing gender bending and things like that. They didn't really have those things. Except, you know, in England, where you had dudes dressing as women at the theater. You know, women can't be actors. Disgusting! So John Atkins is like, no indentured servant of mine is going to be so confusing. We got to figure out what the heck is going on with Thomas / Thomasine Hall. Cue the theme song. This is American Filth, and I'm Gabby Watts, and every week I tell you a filthy story from American history. Today's episode, Thomas versus Thomasine. One of you guys out there told me that you like when I sing along with the theme, so I just did it, and I hope it was satisfactory for you. Also, just a little side note is throughout this episode, you might notice that I use all of the pronouns interchangeably for Hall, but as you'll see, Thomas / Thomasine Hall's gender identity was very fluid. So let's be fluid with the language. Let's be progressive. Let's see how it feels. But let's get to the story so that you know what the hell I'm talking about. Sometime in 1627, Thomas / Thomasine Hall boarded a ship from England and eventually arrived in Warroquioque, Virginia. This had been an Indian village and now was a small English settlement located near the James River. And the settlers there liked to call it James City, which was a bit optimistic because, as you'll see, it was hardly a metropolis of any sort. At most, James City probably had about 200 colonists, and that's at most. During the time we're talking about, it seemed more like 100 or so. But see, at this point, it was really hard for England to get people excited about going to the colonies. In the 1620s, people in England were hearing reports about disease and starvation. And then in 1622, there was an extremely fatal attack by Native Americans on the settlements of Virginia. About 350 English settlers were killed, which was about a fourth of their population there. Also, people were hearing about all the backbreaking labor you would have to do if you were an indentured servant, and women were particularly discouraged from going, which then just exacerbated the already gratuitous ratio of men versus women. England was also having a hard time getting clergy to go over to Virginia, so Virginia had this reputation of being godless and immoral. Heaven forbid. And in the 1620s, almost everyone in Virginia was growing tobacco. Tobacco was becoming popular amongst the British elite. James City had two main plantations producing tobacco. There was Bennett's Welcome, and then there was also Bass's Choice. What quaint names for plantations that abused indentured servants and then slaves. These plantations were named for the prominent people who were living in the settlement. There was the Bennett family. They had established their plantation in 1621. Bass's Choice was the plantation of Nathaniel Bass, and it was established in 1622. But yeah, even with the esteemed Bennetts and Basses, they were still having a hard time attracting people to come to James City and colonial Virginia. I don't see why they have such a great pitch. They're like, hey, you want to come be an indentured servant and get a terrible wage and do backbreaking labor all day and just feel like shit? What a pitch. At this point in the 17th century, most of the labor on the plantations was performed by indentured servants. And most of these indentured servants were young men, ages 18 to 24. Most indentured servants got a contract where the masters of the plantations would pay for their voyage across the sea, which was usually about 4 to 5 months and was horrendous, you know, and then the masters would provide them food and lodging. And then once their contract was completed, maybe the masters would give them various resources and even land to help them start out on their own. But it seemed all those contracts usually weren't honored. It was very rare if an indentured servant ever got any of the stuff they were promised. And that's all to say that this was the world that Thomas Hall was entering into. So it's hard to pinpoint the exact order of events because people were bad at editing and punctuation in the 17th century. Can you believe that? I mean, fine, maybe it was just different. I don't know. But it seems that Thomas Hall arrived to James City sometime in 1627. And when he crossed the Atlantic, he had the identity of a man. But then, at some point, he seemed to change into the identity of a woman. But everyone was a bit confused with Thomas and Thomasine Hall, because it does seem that as soon as Hall arrived at the plantation, they continued to alternate between men's and women's clothing. Rumors started circulating. People were like, what the heck is going on? And then that guy, John Atkins, he was concerned because he was trying to purchase Hall and he needed to know if Hall was a man or a woman. Because the thing is, the value of an indentured servant who is a man is much higher than that of a woman because, you know, women are useless. Also, male and female indentured servants had different roles. Like a male indentured servant might be compelled to enlist in a militia if needed. A man might also be doing different types of labor. And then it was up to the landowners to make sure their indentured servants were behaving in socially acceptable ways. And depending on their gender, that determined, you know, what company they could keep. And then that was an issue because there was another rumor circulating that Hall had been fornicating with a maid who everyone called Great Bess. Hot. But fornication between an unwed woman and a man was illegal. But also, same-sex relationships were extra illegal. So if Thomas Hall was fornicating with Great Bess, that's an issue. But then also if Thomasine Hall is fornicating with Great Bess, that's also an issue. Though I will be honest, Thomasine and Bess together, that's less of an issue because while homosexuality was illegal and all the Puritans were like, disgusting, really it was more of a concern about men with men as opposed to women with women because who cares what women do? They're so silly. And so at some point, all of the colonists in James City, which there were very few of, they decided to take it upon themselves to ascertain Hall's sex. One resident of James City, who seemed to be convinced that Thomas Hall was a man, asked Hall point blank, "Why do you put on women's clothing?" And Hall said something very peculiar. They said, "I go in women's apparel to get a bit for my cat." Now, some very clever historians think that what Hall is talking about by saying, my cat is my cooter, my vagina, etc., my hoo-ha. Perhaps suggesting that they dressed as a woman to engage in sex and perhaps to be a prostitute. Make a little money on the side. Because remember, James City, like all of these little settlements in Virginia that were ungodly and immoral, there's an ass ton more dudes than women. You know, they'll take any cat they can get. But the thing is, the colonists were not limiting themselves to mere questions and inquiries. No, no. Many of the colonists took it upon themselves to do bodily inspections of Hall and basically be the cops. The woman who would lead a lot of these inspections was Alice Long. Alice was married and had at least one child. In 1629, she was probably about 27 years old, and she had been in James City since 1620, making her one of the few people who had been there longer than a couple of years. There are no records of how she spent her days, but a lot of the women in the town tended to the sick, they delivered babies, did stuff like that. But as the veteran of the town, she was also probably up in everyone's business and the informal leader of the few dozen women who lived there. And so one day, Alice and two of her lady cronies assaulted Hall, looked in their pants, and based on what they saw, they declared that Hall was a man. At this point, Hall was still in the service of John Tyros, and Alice reported the news that Hall was a man, but Tyros was like, "No, I swear to God, Hall is a woman." And again, this was giving Atkins a headache. He's like, I need to know which sex my future indentured servant is going to be. So before Atkins made his purchase of Hall, he took the issue to Captain Nathaniel Bass. Remember, this guy owned one of the big plantations in James City, and as the plantation commander, he was basically the political authority of the settlement. Atkins was probably like, please go ascertain whether or not Hall is a boy or a girl. So Captain Bass went up to Hall directly and said, yo, are you a boy or a girl? And Hall said to him, I am both a man and a woman. And Captain Bass was like, what? Hall explained further. They're like, yeah, even though I'm both a man and a woman, I don't technically have use of a man's part. I do have something hanging down there, though. There was, quote, a piece of flesh growing at the belly, bigger than an inch long. With this explanation, Captain Bass immediately told Hall to dress as a woman. He's like, sure, you got a piece of flesh down there, but if you don't have a full man dick, you can't dress as a man. His logic, like a lot of people's logic back then, is that if you're impotent, you're basically a woman. And then it seems at this point that Atkins is satisfied with his result. He's like, okay, Thomasine Hall it is, come be my indentured servant. Or more like, I'm going to purchase you and you have to work for me. And so Thomasine leaves the Tyros household and goes to the Atkins. But the thing is, after Captain Bass decreed this, the settlers, particularly the ladies under Alice Long, were not satisfied. They couldn't let it go. Alice Long was like, but I saw a pee-pee, I swear to God. So Alice took it upon herself to do another search of Hall. Alice and a gang of gals went to the Atkins residence, where Hall was now living. When the gang got to Hall's room, they found her in her female attire and asleep. And then Alice and her cronies delicately pulled back the blanket as to not rouse Hall, pulled back her dress, and were like, aha, just as we knew all along, there's a penis-looking thing down there. They hurried out of the room and went to Atkins, and they told him he better do a search himself. They're like, Hall is a man. We saw it. People are lying to you. Captain Bass made the wrong decision. So Atkins went to Hall's room, but he pussied out of the search, ironically, when Hall started moving around in her sleep. You know, that would be embarrassing for Atkins if Hall woke up and was like, what the frick are you doing in here trying to look at my junk? Or more likely what they would have said was, what the fricketh art thou doing in mine chambers trying to looketh at my junketh? And the thing is, we don't really have a perspective on how Hall felt about all of this, but I admire their resilience in face of all of these searches. But I also admire them because they seem to be a very heavy sleeper. Jealous. And the thing is, even after these two searches, well, one search and one attempt at a search, that wouldn't be the end of them. Because a few days later, Alice conscripted some more women to her cause, and those women, along with their husbands, went in search of Hall to do their own investigation. You know, what a fun double date idea to go assault someone. And then John Atkins joined as a fifth wheel. The group found Hall, and it seems that the women and Hall tussled around a little bit before they were able to look underneath Hall's skirts. And once they did, they declared, ah, Hall is a man. Look, there's some junk. It was at this point that Atkins finally saw what was going on underneath Hall's clothes. And Atkins said, is that all you have? And then Hall replied, I have a piece of a hole. Now, I had originally interpreted what Atkins said, is that all you have? Meaning, do you also have a vagina? But other historians have interpreted this as, is that all you have? You know, kind of being more like unimpressed with a piece of flesh protruding from Hall's belly. Being like, is that all you have? That doesn't even look like a wiener. But after Hall said, I have a piece of a hole, Atkins, very frustrated probably, commanded Hall to lay down on their back and have the two women do another inspection, this time to look for a vagina. And then after that inspection, the women said they couldn't find one. So then at this point, Atkins was like, Hall, you have to dress as a man. And he went back to Captain Bass and he was like, hey, Thomas Hall is a man. He's going to be wearing men's clothing now. He won't be wearing women's clothing like you told him to. And then Atkins here is really painting himself as the victim because he told Captain Bass that he desired Hall to be punished for, quote, his abuse. Because, you know, clearly Hall is abusing him by not saying clearly that they're a man or a woman. And once Thomas Hall was back in men's clothing, it was open season to attack him. There's this one dude, Roger Rhodes, and he came upon Thomas at an upper plantation, dressed in men's clothing, and he took it upon himself to confirm Thomas's sex. Wow, what an upstanding citizen, so helpful. He said, they have reported you to be a woman, and now you are dressed as a man, and I will see what thou carrieth. Then he and a small group of men laid hands upon Thomas and threw him to the ground on his back. They felt him up and, quote, pulled out his member, whereby it appeared he was a man. But the issue that was still at hand was that Atkins wanted Hall to be punished. But what officially would he be punished for? To the settlers, Hall posed a real threat. Because again, James City, it was a teeny tiny little place. It was less than 10 years old. It was in unstable colonial Virginia. And Hall was disrupting the social order. Everything there was so precarious that anyone who messed that up needed to be dealt with. There was also the question of whether or not Hall had slept with Great Bess, the maid. But no one seemed to know who started this rumor. At first, everyone thought Alice Long had said it, but then Alice was like, no, I reported it not. Maybe one of the servants over at the Tyros household said something about it. I don't know. And since everyone was confused and didn't know what to do, they were like, well, send Hall to Jamestown and let the Council General Court of Colonial Virginia figure it out. We'll be right back after these soothing advertisements.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So on March 25th, 1629, Hall, dressed in men's attire, was sent down to Jamestown to appear before the court to explain himself slash herself slash themself. Hall's account was recorded down by a clerk. John Atkins and also another man from James City came to present evidence. And the tone of the recording of this account seems very blasé. It seemed that the colonial governor of Virginia, John Pott, might have been slightly annoyed by this investigation, being like, why is this being brought before us? They seem so unconcerned about it that they're like, no, we're not going to do a physical inspection of Thomas Hall. Y'all just tell us what's going on and we'll figure it out. Most of the report just talks about the investigation that the various colonists had done into Thomas's situation. But finally, we learn about Hall's personal history. Hall said that they were born Thomasine Hall and were baptized a girl. She lived in Newcastle upon Tyne until she was 12 years old and then went to live with her aunt in London, where she lived for another 10 years. And then her brother joined the army. And so Thomasine was like, oh, I'm going to do that too. So she cut off her hair, put on some men's clothes, and joined him as a soldier. Thomas ended up being involved in a very bloody battle, where about half of all the English soldiers involved were killed. And then when he was done with his military service, he decided to wear women's clothing again. So Thomasine, she moved to Plymouth. And she was doing various needlework and making lace, you know, trying to make a living. And Plymouth was a place in England where a lot of people would live before they set out across the Atlantic. And so at some point she decided, hey, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the colonies as an indentured servant. When she got on the boat, she assumed the identity of Thomas Hall again, putting on men's clothing. And that kind of makes sense because the passage over to the colonies was not safe for a single woman. But then also, as a man, her value as an indentured servant dramatically increased, meaning that he could escape his contract faster. Because again, women are useless and can't do important tasks like hauling logs. But then again, when she was working under John Tyros, she was Thomasine again. Why she changed from Thomas back to Thomasine then? No idea. And then when she was in James City, it seems she would go between those two identities. So now with all this evidence presented to the court, what was the General Council of Colonial Virginia gonna do? Now, reading this text from 1629, a lot of historians hypothesize that Thomas slash Thomasine Hall was intersex, as they say in the text, a hermaphrodite. They likely possess both female and male sex organs. So how did people think of intersex people back in the day? Well, they didn't think about them very much, it seems. Because back in the 17th century, there wasn't much understanding about sexual difference when it came to the actual biology of a person. And most people sort of understood the concept of being a woman versus being a man in more of a Christian or legal framework. You know, men and women were assigned specific roles, specific tasks, their worth. Some historians say that before the 19th century, people didn't even think of women and men as two separate sexes and just said that a woman was just an imperfect version of a man. You know, women weren't capable of creating the external sex organs. because women did not possess the vital heat to generate them. Ergo, we obviously have deformed, defective organs that can only do stupid stuff like carry a baby. And the thing is, back then, the church and the law, they're really all about like, hey, you're either a man or you're a woman. That's it. You know, unlike today when there's no threats on people's liberties or anything. Haha. In most European countries, there were severe punishments for cross-dressing. In some places, it was even a capital punishment. And in England, it was slightly less severe because, again, the theater, where the actors would dress as women, thanks Shakespeare. But intersex people, hermaphrodites, that wasn't cross-dressing. That was a separate issue. And apparently about 1 in 2,000 people are intersex. So a hermaphrodite, that wasn't a totally unknown thing at the time. But likely it would have been considered like a birth defect. And a lot of people at the time ascribed any birth defects to God being mad at them. Another reason your kid might have a birth defect is because when your mom was pregnant with you, she had too much maternal imagination. That's right, ladies, if you're too creative when you're pregnant, maybe your baby's gonna be messed up. You could also have a messed up baby if you conceived the child while the mother was on her period. Who knew? So yeah, that just goes to say that people knew what an intersex person was. They weren't into it, but they knew that intersex people existed. But the thing is, society demanded that that person make a choice, choose which sex they want to be, and stay that way their entire life. And so that's the issue with Hall. Hall had transgressed because they chose to change from one presentation to another. That was the big no-no. You gotta be one. So after that long rant about gender and sexuality and childbirth, let's get back to the court. What was their decision? The court's decision was so bizarre and uncharacteristic of the time that some people think this event is historically insignificant because nothing like it had ever happened before or after. This was just an anomaly in history. They said, Thomas/Thomasine Hall, what we're going to have you do is that you're going to dress as a man, but you will also wear an apron and a hat that women wear. And so they were like, yeah, you got to wear this weird hybrid outfit between men and women's clothing. And you could see this punishment in a variety of ways. You know, maybe they're telling Hall that they have to wear this weird outfit to shame them and mark them as someone who is different. Or the court might have thought this was a creative solution that would suit everybody. Or it was an unheard of acknowledgement of a third gender category. And also, it was a pretty lenient judgment. They also didn't even bring up the fact that Hall might have fornicated with Great Bess. How can you forget about Great Bess in a time like this? But it's still a punishment, because we know Hall liked to present as a man and also as a woman separately. And now they have to wear this stupid outfit for the rest of their life. And now we don't know if the colonists of James City were completely satisfied with this. We just don't know what happened because Thomas/Thomasine Hall was never mentioned again in the history records. We don't know if the people of James City stopped assaulting Hall all the time. You know, did Hall actually wear that outfit? What we do know of the people mentioned in this story is Nathaniel Bass. He became a representative at the House of Burgesses. He also was on the council of the governor. And then the Bennetts, who had the other plantation, the guy who ran it while Thomasine was there, Richard Bennett, he eventually became the governor of Virginia in the 1650s. Good for him. But Thomas/Thomasine Hall, we have no idea. I hope they had a good life and didn't have to wear that unfortunate outfit the whole time. Just like every episode of American Filth, we learn a lesson. And I think the lesson we learned today is just mind your own fucking business about what's in people's pants. Stop being a psycho about it. American Filth is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcast. It is produced, hosted, written by me, Gabby Watts. Our theme song is by me and Jesse Neiswanger. Our executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Elsie Crowley, and Brandon Barr. You can follow along with the pod on Instagram at American Filth Pod. Also, leave a review. Give us some stars. Thanks for listening to this episode. Bye. School of Humans.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.